Bhagavad Gita, chapter 4, text 22. Is that right? You have Bhagavad Gitas? No. Okay. I'll read the Sanskrit and translation, and we'll discuss the verse.
Yadircha labdha santushto dvandvatito vimatsara samaksiddhau asiddhau cha kritvapi na nibhajyate.
He who is satisfied with gain that comes of its own accord, who is free from duality and does not envy, who is steady in both success and failure, is never entangled, although performing actions. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. A Krishna conscious person does not make much endeavor even to maintain the body. He is satisfied with gains which are obtained of their own accord. He neither begs nor borrows, but he labors honestly as far as is in his power, and is satisfied with whatever is obtained by his own honest labor. He is therefore independent in his livelihood. He does not allow anyone's service to hamper his own service in Krishna consciousness. However, for the service of the Lord, he can participate in any kind of action without being disturbed by the dualities of the material world. The duality of the material world is felt in terms of heat and cold, or misery and happiness. The Krishna conscious person is above duality because he does not hesitate to act in any way for the satisfaction of the Lord. Therefore, he is steady both in success and failure. These signs are visible when one is fully in transcendental knowledge. So, chapter 4 is entitled Transcendental Knowledge. In chapter 4, Krishna is introducing for the first time information or understandings about himself. He's disclosing his transcendental identity, and transcendental knowledge culminates in knowledge of Krishna. And the means for understanding transcendental knowledge, in other words, there's jnana and vijnana, there's these qualities of a brahmana, samadamak tapakshocham shantir arjavam evacha, jnanam vijnanam mastikyam brahmakarma svabhavacham. So, vijnana is distinct from jnana, in that vijnana, Prabhupada would translate as applied knowledge or realization as opposed to theoretical. He would give the example, because his profession as a householder was, he was a chemist. So he would give the example of adding sulfur and oxygen and it gets sulfur dioxide, or you take hydrogen and oxygen and you make water. So that's, you learn that in the science textbook, but then the real test is you go to the lab and you, here's some oxygen, here's some hydrogen, make some water. And then you can make some water. If you can make some water with two gases, you make a liquid. That's practical. So he would use that example. And same with theoretic, with spiritual understanding. There's the understanding that we're not this body. And then there's real life, where I was astonished in the year 2000, you know, in the turning of the century. They were doing many, many, many different kinds of surveys about, you know, the population base and how people were and thought and so on. Sociological studies and all kinds of population studies and value studies. So one of the studies that I was particularly taking note of is the study of people's religious values and convictions. So in the United States, in the year 2000, the range of people were, you know, from 18 to 35, and variety of income and sociological backgrounds. So it was, at least it was purported to be a spectrum of people. Something like over 90% of the people believed in the soul. Can you believe that? And something like 82% believed in afterlife. Now, I don't know how you can believe in the soul and you don't believe in afterlife, but because soul means eternal. If there is soul, then after this life, the soul is still existing. So whatever that 8 or 9% believe in the soul but don't believe in afterlife, I don't know what that was. But then you look at the way that people lead their life. So they have this belief, they have some knowledge that they accept as true, but then do they lead their life that way, that they believe that their soul? I don't see that. They wouldn't lead the life that they live. If in fact they believe that their soul. So whatever that idea of believing in the soul, I don't know what that means. In Bhagavad Gita, that's the starting point for Krishna's discussion in chapter 2. It's distinguishing, there's confidential knowledge, and that's knowledge that's very important to us. That's like who we are. That's very confidential to us. The soul, that's who we are, distinct from matter. Now, the next phase of knowledge is more confidential knowledge. Chapter 4, the distinction between the soul and the supreme soul. And Krishna is the supreme soul. He discloses that in chapter 4. And the verses that just precede this text 22, there's a process of, it's summarily described, and it's going to be expanded in chapter 5. But it's what's the sadhana of persons who see the distinction between the individual soul and the supreme soul. How do they live? And then this verse and the previous verse is just as the word in the verse says, samak siddha. They achieve the perfection. Those who are on the platform of acting in relation to the supreme in perfection. They're no longer in duality, in short. So now we'll go back to chapter 2. When Krishna's just beginning to instruct Arjuna about the soul different than matter, he gives a practical, besides the theoretical, he gives a practical. It says that a symptom of one who understands the soul distinct from matter doesn't identify with matter. And the features of matter are manifest in duality. Heat and cold, pleasure, pain, wet and dry, light and dark, up and down, friend, enemy, mine, not mine. It's just the feature of material world is duality. And when the advice that Krishna gives is when you perceive the feature of duality, what should you do? You tolerate it. Tung sticho subharata. Matra sparshas tu konte asitoshna sukha dukada agama payo nityas. Tung sticho subharata. two important things just to augment what this verse is saying. One is, the first is that how does this sense of duality arise? Answer, it arises from sense perception. Matra sparshas tu kaunteya. Due to perception of the senses only. So how does it work? The senses are instruments for gathering information. So there's the knowledge gyanendriya, the knowledge acquiring senses. So here's the ear, and the ear is hearing sound, and the sound goes to the mind. The eyes are seeing light, the light comes in, and it goes to the mind. And so forth, touch and smell and taste. Sense input, and it goes to the mind, and then the mind reads it as I like it, I don't like it. Just according to the orientation of the mind. You change the orientation of the mind, and you change whether you like it or don't like it. Yes? As the saying goes, one man's food is another man's poison. In New York, our temple is just on the other side of the Manhattan Bridge in Brooklyn. So to go across the Manhattan Bridge, you go through Chinatown. So many times to go into Manhattan, to go on Harinam Sankirtan or book distribution, we'd go into the city and we'd come back in the evening, would be to attend the evening aarti at the temple. When we're going back to the temple to attend evening aarti, it's dinner time in Chinatown. And Chinese people like things that are just nauseating when you smell them cooking. So, you know, we're going across in the car across the Manhattan Bridge and going. But to them, they're going, And it may be just the other way around. You know, they come to see what we're preparing and they go, ooh. And they like that as, It's configuration of the mind. And if you can change the configuration, so different, you get the idea. One airplane steward was describing to me, when people get into airplanes, they're all into the climate control. You know, so if they're from a hot climate, they like it hot. They're uncomfortable if it's cold. And from the cold climate, they like it cold because they're used to it being cold. And if it gets too hot, they're uncomfortable. So it's hard to please everybody because one man's food is another man's poison. It's all just sense perception. The happiness is in the mind. It's not what real... What's the real standard of happiness is not in the realm of duality. There's a whole chapter in Uddhava Gita where Uddhava asks Krishna, where does suffering take place? Because the soul is Satchidananda. Yes? Part and parcel of Krishna, who's supreme, Satchit Ananda Param, Ishwara Parama Krishna, Satchit Ananda Vigraha. So the soul is naturally blissful. If the soul is naturally blissful, why is there suffering? Where does suffering even take place? So Krishna says, that's a very wonderful question. I'll answer your question by telling you a story. And he tells a story, the Avanti Brahman story. I'm not going to review the whole chapter, but it's a Brahmin once upon a time in Avantipur. There was a Brahmin who was very wealthy, but he was also very miserly, because Brahmins aren't supposed to be miserly, they're supposed to be liberal. very generous, but he was very miserly. So miserly, everybody despised him because he always was thinking about his wealth. He was even so miserly with his family. He neglected his family. And they were very unhappy with him. He got so absorbed in his wealth that he even stopped his brahminical practices just to make some more wealth. And because he neglected his brahminical practices, he lost the mercy of Krishna. And when he lost the mercy of Krishna, all of his wealth went away. This thing happened, that thing happened, and his wealth was gone. And when his wealth was gone, whatever little bit was left, his family took and left him. And all the people that he had treated so badly, they also hated him. So he didn't know what to do. So he did the only thing he knew what to do, and that was he took shelter of his brahminical practices again. And as he took shelter of his brahminical practices, with no false shelter, he became spiritually strong. In that position of spiritual strength, he had no material facility, so he accepted a renounced position, became a mendicant. But people considered him, he's just a miser. He's just doing this to get something from us. So they never gave him anything. And whenever a little bit that he did accumulate, someone would come and steal it from his begging bowl. Whatever rice he had accumulated, sorry to repeat this, but the boys would urinate in his rice bowl and laugh at him. You're just a cheater. Get out of here. And strong language and abusive, because he had abused people, he was getting it back. And he was thinking, why am I suffering? Then he goes into this long philosophical, maybe I'm suffering because, and he gave all of his reasons. Maybe it's my karma. Maybe it's the stars. Maybe it's the will of providence. Maybe it's this. Maybe it's that. And then he goes through this long list and says, no, it's not this because of this reason. It's not that because of that reason. And dismisses all those reasons. Then he says, the conclusion of the story is, the suffering is just because of my mind. And it doesn't work to have a lobotomy, just like, you know, cut out your mind or something. Because even the mind, the brain, is not your mind. The mind is subtle. You can't stop thinking even for a moment. You can't stop desiring even for a moment because desire is concomitant with the soul. So many people are busy on the mental platform, and many people are busy chasing the happiness that their mind sees. It's like chasing a carrot at the end of the stick, which you never catch, because it's always ahead of you. One step more, one step more, one step more. When does that happiness actually happen? It never happens. It's always going to happen the next moment. Samsparshaja. Yehi samsparshaja bhoga. Dukha yonaya evate. In that anticipation, bhoga is the anticipation of happiness through the meeting of the senses with sense object. What arises from that? Dukkha. It's like a womb which produces a child. The child is distress. And the womb is senses meeting sense objects with the expectation of happiness. That's material life. Chasing after the mirage of happiness that never happens, because it's always ahead of you, but you're always pursuing it, and going further and further into the desert where there's no water, looking for water, because there's the mirage, but it looks like water. But it's only distress, because it's a desert where there's no water. By definition, that's what a desert is, a place where there's no water, looking for water. We're in the material world, where by design, dukkhalayam ashashvatam, the place by design is a place of dukkha. And we're looking for sukha in a place of dukkha. Guess what happens? You're disappointed. Sukha never happens, but we're always anticipating it. That's called maya. So Krishna is indicating to Arjuna in the second chapter, when that perception based upon the senses of duality arises, tolerate it. But I'll tell you a secret. When Krishna says to tolerate, it means that's the prohibition. The secret is there's an injunction where to place your consciousness instead. If you withdraw consciousness from duality, then what do you do? Where is consciousness supposed to go? He doesn't say it in chapter 2, but he says it here in chapter 4. You place your consciousness in sat. Actually, he does say it in chapter 2. Na sate vijite bhavo, na bhavo vijite sataha. Ubayor api drishtontas tvaniyos tatva darshibi. A tatva darshi, this is a tatva darshi school, where you're being trained to see the truth. And the truth is, for those who are seers of the truth, sat has value. Asat has no value. So you withdraw consciousness from asat and place consciousness in sat. Very simple. As long as you can control your mind, it's very simple. And if you can't control your mind, then you suffer. And people don't like to suffer. So better to control the mind. But it's difficult to control the mind. What to do? Therefore, Krishna gives Bhagavad Gita. He gives a sadhana, a practice, where you practice controlling the mind. The lesson of how to control the mind, how to withdraw the mind from asat, is to place the mind where there is actual contact with sat, such that one experiences a greater happiness. That's not difficult. If someone offers you, would you like a burnt laddu, or would you like a nice, freshly made, nicely cooked laddu? Which one would you like? You know, they look at the one, it's all black and yucky looking, and here's this nice laddu. I'll take that one, please. Just as we discussed this afternoon about Vishaya Vinivartante Niraharsha Dehinam Rasovarjam Rasopyasya Pram Drishtva Navartate. To try to keep the senses away from enjoyment of sense objects is very difficult for the embodied soul, and most of us are embodied. There may be some disembodied living entities floating around, but most of us are embodied. And so for embodied souls, it's difficult to restrain the senses from that attraction from sense objects. Even we know it's a mirage. At least we read it in Bhagavad Gita, theoretically we read it. I'm spirit soul, I'm not this body. And we go after the illusory objects of the senses. It's the illusory energy, what can I do? Just going after it. But it's to change that pattern, it's quite possible. Raso vargam, raso pyasya, param drishtvandavartate, by param drishtra, by a higher taste, one can overcome that lesser taste. It's something that's unattractive and something that's attractive. Which would you like? I like the attractive one, thank you. Like, you know, those of us who are long-time vegetarians, somebody offers you something that's non-vegetarian. It's not a big decision to make. It's no thank you. No decision. Would you like some Mahaprasad from the deities, or would you like some unmentionable something from McDonald's? There's no choice to be made. It's very easy. So that's what this verse is describing. The siddhi, the perfection of this sadhana, is where one's consciousness is fully invested in sat. And that full investment of sat process is the bhakti process. Prabhupada makes that very clear in the purport. A Krishna conscious person is above duality because he has invested his consciousness fully in sat, or he says he does not hesitate to act in any way for the satisfaction of Krishna, because he's sat chit ananda vigra, he's the supreme sat, param satyam dhimahi. This is the language of Srimad Bhagavatam. So the sequence here is yadrichchaya labdha santushto. Yadrichcha is a nice word, and it's a translated sometimes by our acharyas as somehow or other. Like, you know, the living entity falls in the material world, and people ask the question, why does a living entity fall in the material world? The answer is yadrichchaya, somehow or another. Okay. Can you give one of those? So it comes of its own accord, is how he's translated it here. So one is doing some practical activity. Chapter 3, Krishna explains, we all have to do some practical activity. Conversely, you can't refrain from activity. You can't refrain from activity because the soul is active. Yes? The soul is the active component of life. Try to do nothing. You can't do nothing. The soul is active. So you have to do something, and you do something, and there's bondage. What's that work where you're doing all types of things and there's no bondage? It's where you're detached from duality. What is that? You're attached to the Supreme. One of the early verses in chapter 5 of Bhagavad Gita, very simple point, Krishna explains what is called renunciation, this detachment, is the same as yoga, or linking oneself with the Supreme, because no one can be detached without being attached to something. You can't be detached from duality without being attached to reality. You have to be attached to sat, attached to the Supreme. And that process of attached to the Supreme is you act in relation to the Supreme. When you're acting in relation to the Supreme, the consideration isn't, are my senses going to like it or not? It's not like, you know, I visited Hyderabad because I like the warm weather. And I won't go back to America because it's winter. It's very cold. It doesn't matter, hot, cold. It's not the consideration for making decisions in life and the actions that you perform. It's based upon another principle. What's the other principle? What's pleasing to Krishna? If something is pleasing to Krishna, that's pleasing. Prabhupada gives the example of motherhood. Look at what mothers do, and it's, oh boy. You know, babies crying and passing and screaming and throwing things around and making things dirty and messy, and what a job that is. But mothers love it because of their affection for their child. So same with affection, what to speak of mother for a child, affection for Krishna. For the service of Krishna, it may look like austerity. But for the devotee, it's happiness. Yeah? For the brahmana, their wealth is their austerity, which sounds like a contradiction, because austerity is you do without things. But for the brahmana, that's their happiness. That's their wealth. For a kshatriya, it's a fight. They like a fight. Some other people, oh, there's a fight. Kshatriyas like fights. You know, especially if it's a virtuous kshatriya, for religious principle, they like fights. And if there isn't a religious fight, then they'll get someone, you know, a sparring partner, and they'll have combat, because they like. Like, you know. They like. That's happiness. So for a devotee, what's happiness? The happiness is not, what's the configuration of matter, please, and then I'll decide if I want to do my service or not. Doesn't matter, the configuration of matter. The happiness is in the service. It's the connection with the Supreme. It's connection with Sat. And so they're indifferent, literally indifferent. There's this chapter 2, Krishna says, tolerate. Chapter 4, Krishna says, be indifferent. Because in between chapter 2 and chapter 4 is this thing of placing consciousness in Sat. And when you place consciousness in Sat, it can be this feature of duality, that feature of duality, doesn't matter. Provided service is there, it doesn't matter. If I'm deprived of service, that matters. But if I have an opportunity to serve Krishna, it can be this configuration, that configuration. There's varieties of service. And so, it's explained here in the purport that the devotee can do anything. Anything that's meant for the pleasure of Krishna. And if it's not meant for the pleasure of Krishna, they have no interest. Like the example of the tortoise. He can extend his limbs, or he can withdraw his limbs. So here comes some service. There go the senses, doing some service. Service is over. Haribo. Just according to another principle. It's not the principle of samsparsha japoga. It's the principle of raso varjam rasopyasya. It's this, the happiness of the soul connecting with the Supreme. And that's the standard of happiness. So the verse is saying, yadrichcha labdha santushto. Those things you're working, of its own accord, something comes, santushta, satisfied. Prabhupada was training specifically, he was commenting specifically about his Western devotees. He was training us to be happy, to be in a very simple situation, or happy to be in a situation where there may be opulence, but remain undisturbed in that situation of opulence or the situation of simplicity. It was. I'll give the example. He was a morning walk, and I've shared this several times, but it's nice to share it again. It was in Vrindavan, and Prabhupada walked out the front gate, made a right-hand turn, went down a long distance. Now it's all those buildings and shops and noise and smells and stuff. But you keep going, and there's like a forest down on the right-hand side. So he went down along the road and into the forest, and Prabhupada was in this mood of saying, ah, Vrindavan. simple life. One can live just whatever is supplied from nature, and a mendicant can go to the home of a grihastha that has a cow. At the time of milking, they come with their little kamandalu, and any household that we have would give a little container of milk and take the natural products of nature, and economic problem finished for the day, the rest of the day, simply engaged in devotional service, hearing and chanting about Krishna. He walked over to a tree that had these pods hanging, and he asked one devotee, "Is this edible?" And he was tugging on it. Nature supplies, trees supply things that are edible for people. And we walked a little further, and there was like a kind of a cliff hanging over, and then agriculture area. He said, "See over there, there's a grihastha couple. See over there, they have a cow. The mendicant can go to take some milk from the grihastha in the morning time. Take some roots, some berries, whatever is there, finished. The rest of the day," like that. He was speaking just on and on and on. Simplicity, simplicity. And then all of a sudden, his mood changed. I took it as deliberate. He was instructing us. But he turned to Brahmananda and said, "Brahmananda, did you receive the $50,000? Did you go and check the color separations and make sure that the printer is doing the job properly? Did you personally inspect? Make sure when you leave Vrindavan, you go check that. You know, business talk," and immediately switched back to the other. Then he explained that a devotee should be satisfied in whatever situation Krishna puts them in. They should be prepared to be satisfied where it's just simple living. And they should be prepared to satisfy Krishna doing, he's a sannyasi, but talking about printing books for Krishna is service that is Prabhupada's books. It was his writing, and he wanted to see the quality was a respectable quality, and that his devotees were trained how to see to those duties. So he was instructing them. Happy in any situation. I'll tell another Prabhupada story. Once the devotees asked Prabhupada if he would pose for pictures that they could put on the altar. So Prabhupada became a little charming in his mood and said, "Very well, but you'll have to have two different pictures." "Oh yes, Prabhupada, as many pictures as you like." But he had a purpose in mind. First, Prabhupada dressed in very simple dhoti, no kurta, his uttariya, his top draped over the side, and holding his danda. And he stood, he orchestrated the whole thing. It was underneath a big tree, so there was like a dark background with a saffron-clad sannyasi in front of the tree standing just at the edge of the shade. It was very nicely choreographed. The shade of the tree, the big green tree behind, and Prabhupada in a very serious look. They took many pictures. And then Prabhupada said, "Okay, now the second picture." He had them get a purple velvet, crushed velvet background. He went and changed his clothes and got bright orange silk with long sleeve kurta with buttons with a crushed velvet background. Like, you know, the king. And Prabhupada came out after changing his clothes, and he stood there like this and did a little pirouette. He, you know, turned around slowly, like he was showing off his nice clothes. And then said, "For Krishna, we can accept either simplicity or extravagance and not be disturbed." Illustrating what the verse is saying. He was training us that whatever Krishna sends your way as service to him, be happy in that service and accept this situation, that situation. Sometimes devotees say, I'll gladly do that service, Prabhu, provided da 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 da. And if you provide the da 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 da, then I can do my service. And if you don't, no service. When Prabhupada came to America, there wasn't da 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 da, there was nothing. That was the order of his spiritual master and his faith in the order of his spiritual master. And that's all there was. And he created the da 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 da, the service to his spiritual master, because that was his service. And that's how our Hare Krishna movement spread. Persons that had that faith. And now we have a nice temple. I remember, I've shared this before also, but the first time I came to Hyderabad was when this temple was first acquired. And you may not believe it, but it's true. It was just dirt. And there all these big buildings around weren't around. It was just like, you know, a construction site. We slept on the earthen floor and we used latrines. I don't know if you know what that was. You know, just holes in the ground with a three-sided wall. And that was what we bathed and passed right there on this property for a week. And now it's, you know, got a nice room and a running water and flushing toilet. And most of the time things work. Air-conditioned room, sound system. We didn't have anything. We didn't have anything. And now you have so many things. So now that there's so many things, it's not now I can do my service and I have, you know, complacency is not the program. Or enjoyment is not the program. Service is the program. And someday someone may have to go here or go there and start a temple where there's nothing. It's just like, you know, the Bhubaneswar temple. I remember the first time I visited in Bhubaneswar. Has any of you been to Bhubaneswar temple? ISKCON Bhubaneswar? It's a nice temple. When I went there, unbelievable. And as far as you could see in all directions, it was nothing. It was out in the middle of nowhere. All there was a pile of wood that was going to be used for something. I don't know what it was. And a little straw hut. And that was Gaur Govinda Maharaj's place. And that was it. That was ISKCON Bhubaneswar. Wow. Where do we stay? Under the stars. So we stayed under the stars. We didn't go to a nearby motel because we didn't have the means for that. We just stayed under the stars. And they didn't even have a hole ground for the bathroom. It was just... And we were, you know, Western people. Not understanding what a life of simplicity was. Gaur Govinda Maharaj understood, and the devotee that was there serving him. So happy in any circumstance provided one thing. There's some service. So that's... Yadidrichcha labdha santushto dvandva atita vimatsara. Yeah. Vimatsara is free from envy. Matsara is envy. Vimatsara is free from envy. Envy means somebody has something and I don't have that something. But I want that something they have. So I envy them because they have that something. So the vimatsara is one is satisfied with whatever one has. They're not coveting or anxious to have what somebody else has. This material world is driven by envy. It's a big part of marketing. As you ramp up people's envy, somebody has something, so you got to have another something like they have. Sama. That's equipoised in mind. Seeing samak sarveshu bhuteshu, Krishna sees all living entities equal. So the realized soul, samak siddhau, asiddhau cha, seeing, you know, those that are in the elevated stage and those that are the unfortunate stage, seeing with equal vision. You know, how is that possible? It's possible when your consciousness is invested in sat. Here's a feature of duality. Here's the opposite of that feature of duality. It's just duality. It's just a temporary manifestation of the material energy. It has no real substance. Hare Krishna. My concern goes to that which is of substance. Sat. The practice of investing your consciousness in Sat is called devotional service. So devotional service is, Rupa Goswami says this in Nectar Devotion. Devotional service is not simply a set of behaviors. Do this, don't do that. There are some rules and regulations. Do this, don't do that. But that's not what devotional service is. It's not the essence. The essence is taking shelter of Krishna. And one who has accomplished taking shelter of Krishna is neutral to duality. Their happiness and distress is not dependent upon which configuration of matter is it today. Now I'm happy, now I'm unhappy. There's nothing to do with that. They're indifferent to those things. Their happiness is that Krishna is pleased. Their unhappiness is I'm unable to please Krishna. And I want to please Krishna. And when they see that Krishna is pleased, they're happy. I'll tell you one thing that made Prabhupada very happy. There are many things that made Prabhupada very happy, but guaranteed, Prabhupada was always very happy when there was a new book that was published. It was one of the most relishable things ever in all of Prabhupada's existence with us, is when new books were published. Another thing was when he would hear the scores of how many books were distributed. He would stop everything else and just get absorbed in hearing the distribution. Book publication and book distribution was very dear to him. And so the devotees were very happy to distribute books and publish books because they wanted Prabhupada to be happy. And he was so happy to see that. And when devotees would dance in kirtan, Prabhupada was very happy. I was showing that picture of Prabhupada in San Francisco, Rath Yatra. He was enlivening the devotees and the devotees were enlivening him. It was just such a nice reciprocation. And when persons would leave Krishna consciousness, he was very unhappy. Very, very unhappy. It was very, very painful for him. Even if the devotees left in some offensive way, he was very, very personally, deeply concerned about their welfare and would ask about them. Can somebody find them? Please ask them to come back. And would literally embrace them when they would come back. Ask them, please don't go again. Just stay here. It wasn't something numerical. It was his affection. And people felt that affection. So that's the way of devotional service. It takes us beyond duality into the realm of Sat. And go further and further into the realm of Sat and you have Krishna Loka. And in Krishna Loka you have varieties of loving relationships that our scriptures, especially Srimad Bhagavatam, very beautifully describe what's awaiting for us in the spiritual world. But we have to start with practicing controlling the mind. Withdrawing the mind from anticipation of happiness and temporary things and placing the mind in the realm of pleasing Krishna. Rishikena Rishikesh Sevanam Bhakti Ruchate. So any discussion on this verse from Bhagavad Gita?
Hare Krishna Maharaj.
Hare Krishna.
I have two questions. One is regarding to morning class. You told that spiritual master is not an ordinary person. But as a conditioned soul, we are always affected in three modes of nature. So how to understand the transcendental qualities of spiritual master? Means whether he is smiling or not smiling, whether he is chastising or appreciating, whatever, whether he is...
Spiritual master is not immediately available, you ask someone who has close understanding or close relationship, and they can share if they're pleased or not pleased. Is that all right? Next question.
How to develop a deep appreciation on the speaker rather than getting just information, is how to get deep appreciation and speaker.
Surrender. You want to surrender?
My own mercy.
Okay. We're our conditioning is information processors. Everything is all up here. Practical application of things doesn't matter. Just process information. That's our training. So when we take that tendency to devote to spiritual science, we apply the same, you know, conditioning. Just process the information. But that's not how the message of Bhagavad Gita is to be understood. So the way that the message of Bhagavad Gita is to be understood, different than information processing, is receive the knowledge as if Krishna is directly speaking to you, because he is. It's not pretend, but you can practice that this message of Bhagavad Gita is being spoken by Krishna for me, or when you're reading it, for you, because he is. Take in a personal way. When you read Bhagavad Gita in that way, you'll start to get some realization about the message. Then the next is, you apply it. Practically, you apply it in your life. You ever taught anything? You know, taught somebody how to ride a bicycle, or taught somebody how to write, or taught them anything? One of the things that a teacher, that's very satisfying for a teacher, as they see that the things that they're teaching, the student is applying. Isn't it? So, when you take the message of Bhagavad Gita and you apply that which resonates with you, Krishna is pleased. What happens when Krishna is pleased? You get some realization. When you get some realization, what happens? Your faith increases. And when your faith increases, you go back and read Bhagavad Gita even more diligently than you did before, because your faith has increased. And then you got some deeper understanding about something, so you go and apply it in your life. And what happens? Krishna is pleased. Right? It's very frustrating for a teacher when they're teaching their students and the students don't apply it at all. Right? Very frustrating. Even, you know, something simple. Like, okay, move the book from this side of the table to that side of the table. Can you do that? Sure. And then you don't do it. Yeah, simple. It's very simple. Simple for the simple. Difficult for the crooked. Remember that one from this morning? Anything else? Yes.
Hare Krishna Maharaj. Today morning you were telling us about the topic respect.
It was a nice topic, wasn't it?
In the life of Indra, we see that he disrespects his spiritual master, Brihaspati.
Yeah, he did.
So was it because of pride or
yes.
was it because of familiarity?
It was pride.
Does familiarity pose any obstacle for respecting?
Yes. Yes. The Prabhupada repeats the phrase, familiarity breeds contempt. So, Indra wasn't contemptuous of Brihaspati. He was just proud. He was having a big festival for himself. An Indra Puja. An Indra Loka. And in comes his spiritual master and Indra was so filled with himself, he didn't even notice that Brihaspati entered. Others noticed, but he was just filled with himself. So Brihaspati immediately understood what was going on and just quietly turned and left. The problem in that case was pride. Contempt is something related but different. It's actually ill will towards someone, which is bred by familiarity. Therefore, I'll give three examples. One example is with deity worship. We take darshan of the deity from a distance. Because were we to be very intimate and close with the deity, if we're not pure, becomes familiarity. And then familiarity breeds contempt. And therefore, those who are not qualified, those aren't brahmanas doing the puja, they take darshan of the deity from a distance. And the deity is up on an altar. You know, we're looking up. We shouldn't have, you know, look down. We should look up. And those devotees that are the brahmins on the altar, they should be very careful not to be familiar with the deity. It can happen. And then someone will fall down because they're taking as ordinary. Or another example is Prabhupada trained those who were his servants that whenever they came into his quarters or left his quarters, they would pay obeisances for the purpose of avoiding familiarity. When I was a young brahmachari living in the New York temple, a whole series of Prabhupada's servants fell down for that reason. In close association with Prabhupada, they became literally contemptuous out of familiarity. And so they fell down. So there was a discussion, because it was right at the New York temple. One of the devotees had just left. And one of my godbrothers was being asked, would you like to be the Prabhupada's servant? He said, oh no. I see what happens to his servants. They get familiar and they fall down. And I don't want to... I'll do some service from a distance so I won't be implicated. And those devotees that did that service for some period of time, they were able to maintain respect and therefore they were protected. Hari Sori is one. Shutakirti is another, and you hear from them, and they ooze with respect. But those that abandoned that respect or weren't protected by respect, they became familiar and they fell down. Another is marriage. When husband and wife live together, they're closely associating with one another, and they come to find this shortcoming, that shortcoming. And they start to have their differences over one another's shortcomings. So the protection against that, one of the protections against that is respect. It's not keep your distance because they're living together. But the quality of respect must be there. If respect is lost, the relationship is very seriously damaged, if not broken. The respect must be there. Mutual respect, not just she's supposed to respect him, not the other way around. It's mutual respect. And if mutual respect isn't there, then it becomes terrible, a nightmare. So respect is required. Otherwise, contempt. And that's different than the problem that Indra had with Brihaspati. That was pride. Hare Krishna. Here comes Bhakti Mike. Hare Krishna.
How far we can be on the platform of respect for Maharaj? We going to the any Vaishnava from some days, we can get either familiarity or affection.
Well, one can have, let's take the microphone away from your mouth. One can have affection without being familiar. I'll give an example. Right from the Srimad Bhagavatam, when Krishna was returning back to Dwarka, the ladies of Dwarka were very shy, and so they stood up on the rooftops because of their shyness. But they felt such affection for Krishna that Krishna simply glanced at them. And as Krishna's glance is very powerful, by the way. And as Krishna glanced at them, the glance of Krishna entered their eyes, entered their hearts, and they were so satisfied as if they had embraced Krishna. Affection without familiarity and contempt. That's one example. So affection can be there without intimacy, without physical intimacy. There can be respect and affection. Just by, and cultured people know how to do that. They can show, they can give affection to another just with their eyes. But without, in that there's intimacy, but without the other kind of intimacy, the mundane kind of intimacy. Is that all right?
Hare Krishna Maharaj.
Hare Krishna.
Thank you for such a wonderful class. Maharaj, you are describing how a devotee should not be disturbed whether in whatever circumstance he is, and he should continue his service whether he is in poverty or he is in a comfortable situation or whatever.
Yeah.
So I was just contemplating, like, sometimes in order to do our service, we should accept money and followers and things like that.
No, so, we don't. We engage them, but we don't accept them. It's just a language point. I'm sure that's what you meant. I just, go ahead.
Yeah. So, in the course of dealing with money and followers and things like that, there's a great chance that
one can become falsely enamored.
Yeah.
And fall.
Yes.
Yes.
So, but however, this is our service.
What?
This is our service. We can't give up this service.
Well, you can give up such a service, but supposing one must be very cautious.
Yeah. So,
very cautious.
Yes. So my question is, like, there's a great chance that we may get entangled, and at the same time we can't give up the service. So, like, what should a person do in such a situation?
Be very careful, because you go the other direction. If you're not very careful, you can also have a problem. Yeah, and have a material body and you've got a risk, because there's desires. Otherwise, we wouldn't have a material body. As long as we have material bodies, it's a risk situation. So let's just take the position of being, should I be a brahmachari or should I be a grihastha? Sometimes young men go through that program. There's risk over here and there's risk over here. Choose your risk. For a brahmachari, it's real simple. If somebody gives some donation, it goes to the treasury. And if it goes, if a grihastha earns some money, he has to decide how much will I keep and how much will I give to the treasury. Because he has a duty as a grihastha to maintain his family. So something he must keep, but he also must be charitable. So both positions have not, or opulence and simplicity, have their risks. If it's unnatural over here, it won't be maintained. If it's inordinate over here, it won't be maintained. The material world is a risky place. Padam padam yavi padam yateshan. So now your specific question is, it goes along with what Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur calls it, in the process and the unfolding of bhakti, there's the not having any results, and then there's a little result, and as soon as there's a little result, one can become proud and think of oneself as the enjoyer of that result. The protection is the mood of service, humble mood of service. And that humble mood of service, this facility is not for me to enjoy. The facility is for the benefit of someone that's supplying that facility. It's like Prabhupada gave this example when he was visiting in Detroit. They acquired a new temple, so he agreed to visit. And they got an arrangement for him. They had an arrangement for him to stay in an apartment. So in the arrival lecture, Prabhupada said, I'm going to be here in in Detroit for several days. What would you think if I spent my whole time trying to make my apartment comfortable and then left? Wouldn't that be foolish? One would think, Swamiji has, what's he doing? So if there's some facility, it's to be used in Krishna's service, and we go on to whatever the next facility is. It's for Krishna's service. If everything is for Krishna's service, that's our protection. Whether it's a brahmachari or grahastha, whether it's the preacher who is receiving on behalf of the spiritual master and the society some resource, some new devotees or some wealth, it's all to be used in Krishna's service. One has to be transparent. If one is not transparent, have or have not is a problem. You with me? Without purity, we have a problem. Have or have not. Because have not and we're hankering for a facility. Have and we're trying to be the enjoyer of the facility if there's not purity. And that purity is this simply being very happy in the position of being Krishna's servant. And that applies for grahasthas as it does for renunciates.
Krishna, Maharaj, as being a part of ISKCON Hyderabad and getting such a wonderful training in systematic education of Krishna consciousness.
Okay.
So how to become responsible as a part of this temple?
How to become responsible as part of the temple?
Yes, ma'am.
That's a nice question. Each of us has a part to play. Krishna has given each and every living entity something, some facility, some capacity, some ability. To be responsible is to see whatever that is that Krishna has given one is used conscientiously in a favorable way in service to Krishna. So it is very different for each person, the particular application, how to be responsible in form is different, but in essence is the same. Let that which you have, you're describing the nice training you're receiving. Let that which you have received. Here's what Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur says. When those gifts are given by those who are teaching, examine that gift. It may be specific teachings, it may be specific training, it may be some facility, whatever it is. Look at it from various angles. Try to understand what it is that you have been given. And when doing so, the very act of doing so stirs something inside. Besides realization, it'll stir some gratitude. And when that gratitude is felt, what the expression is devotional service. So now how do you direct that devotional service is based upon guidance that you're receiving, the same persons who are giving practical training, seek indication from them, here's my resources, how do I deploy them? So that it's harmonious with the overall vision. And moved by, propelled by gratitude, you take whatever intelligence Krishna has given you and that resource that Krishna has given you and act harmoniously with the vision and the indication of those who are guiding you. And it will grow nicely that way. Let's go the other direction and say, I'm also a devotee of Krishna. And I'm not so much looking at the gift that I've been giving in terms of who's been giving the gift. I'm just want to run down the street and use this thing. So I'm not thinking what the bigger picture is. I'm thinking, I'm going to use this thing in Krishna's service. So you got somebody over here doing that, somebody over there doing that, somebody over there doing that, and it's like fireworks on Independence Day. It's a waste of energy. It doesn't bring synergy. Often can create clashes. I'll share something with you that from before I actually had decided to dedicate my life to living in a temple, I was practicing Krishna consciousness on my own. I was taking the facility that Prabhupada had given, just like you were describing. I had his books. I had japa beads. I was offering my food to Krishna. I was hearing Prabhupada's lectures. I was practicing Krishna consciousness on my own, and I was very happy. And I was this counterculture American thinking, rebellious thoughts. I don't want to be part of anything organized. I'm, strong independent spirit. Foolishly strong independent spirit. But a certain sequence of things happened where I realized the benefit that I'm receiving is just by Prabhupada's mercy. I could skip the details. It's a nice experience. And when that hit me, I realized I have to give back to Prabhupada. I've been saved from craziness. I have to give back to that person who saved me. And it was like boom, 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 boom. It just happened all at once. It wasn't a pattern of thought. It just flashed. That what is Prabhupada wanting in order to give that same gift to others as I had received is he was establishing temples. I came in contact with Krishna consciousness as a result of that specific arrangement that Prabhupada made. It was at the college where I was attending, but, Rupa Nuga, the devotee that was running the center, had been sent by Prabhupada specifically for that purpose. And I was the recipient of that mercy of Prabhupada. So I had to give back. And I had to do that which was against my grain. My grain was rebellious, independent spirit. But that was my program. That was the program. Instead of, what's the plan of my spiritual master? Let me assist that. Whatever that is, it's not my plan, it's his plan. but my life should become part of His plan. So that's what I did. And here it is so many years later, still doing the same thing, or trying at least. It's gratitude. It's very powerful. When you recognize what it is, not just use it, but recognize what is that gift that you have been given. That touches your heart. You have to act. And how to should be according to that indication that He's given in the association of devotees, by that system that He's given. And I also recognized, well, I could do something on my own, but what's one little guy going to do? But you get a bunch of people together, they can do something far more powerful than one little guy can do. That's Prabhupada's plan. Let me do it. It took a little time because I was involved in school and so on and so on, but that was in my heart. I just wouldn't leave. I didn't try to get it to leave either. It was right. Take direction from those who are qualified devotees, and specifically those who are authorized representatives of this system that Prabhupada has given, and take direction from them. That's how we should act. Is that all right?
How to strengthen our gratitude?
I mentioned what Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur said. Use the faculties that Krishna has given you, your intelligence and analytical ability, and you know, your heart. It's a nice barometer. And appreciate exactly what it is that's been being given to you. And ask that question of others. You know, how can I more, what is this that's being given to me? So you can appreciate exactly what it is. And then let that touch your heart. You can practice gratitude. One of the things that I've recommended for devotees to do is, this is the first one, make a gratitude journal. Enter into your journal, what are the things that I should be grateful for? And then take some time out and contemplate what that is. The Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur. This is the item. Now, what is it really? And then next is articulate words of gratitude. And then comes acts that express those words of gratitude. And then another is those persons from whom you receive something even specifically, without their even knowing that you're doing it, so as you don't get some, you know, acknowledgement points in your report card. But you just do something that will assist them to do what they're doing. Without them even, just from your heart. And practice like that. What is it? That's love. What's important to this person? Let me assist them with that. And gratitude grows. This is our last question. Oh, it's a good one. We got another how-to question.
How can I realize that God is a well-wisher and a loving person?
Devotional service. Do you doubt it? Yeah. We could have a little exercise, just like I described, make a little gratitude list. What are the things that you have? You can, you know, go through that, go to your home, make a little, in your notebook, make a list. Each day, add something to your list and see how long that list gets. Of what are the things that you have at your disposal? What resources and facilities are at your disposal today? And then another column, ask where they came from. Then I think you'll have an answer to your question. Let's say, do the same exercise with your mother and father. What are those things that you have that your mother and father have given you? Make a list. Are they your well-wishers? How much sacrifice have they made? How many hours and so on and so on? And where do they get their resources? So is that person from whom they got the resources your well-wisher? That was our last question. Because otherwise we'd be here. You Hyderabad devotees, you ask so many questions. So many good questions. It's hard to end. But I think we should end. Śrīla Prabhupāda ki jai, Gopi Manandī Haribol.